You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX webradio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is a Thursday edition. It'll be a little shorter than yesterday's, but it'll be about, after post-production, probably about 45 minutes. I wanted to change the subject a little bit because there's been news that the Gallup's U.S. Economic Confidence Index has been spiking up. Now, I'm not totally surprised by that because the key economic part of the Trump agenda, if you will, was a tax cut for corporations, which I applaud. It's long overdue, and he's bringing the corporate rate down to 15%. Now, people need to understand that the corporate rate, no matter what it is, who pays for that? It's the U.S. consumers pay for it when they buy the goods and services of the companies that pay corporate taxes. So it is, indirectly, a cut, and it's a big cut for consumers. But it does take time before it has its effect on the economy and affects consumer behavior. I think what we're seeing with this jump is a recognition that, or a correction, if you will, that we're going to have different economic policies than the Obama administration, and certainly radically different from Hillary Clinton's, which is all good news because of the two candidates. The more pro-growth candidate is simply Donald Trump. There's no contest there. But I still don't think that the overall economic agenda plan of Donald Trump, it really doesn't add up. It does have very positive aspects, especially in the tax area. I was critical even of that, and I think it just simply is too timid. It's not bold enough. And the impression I'm getting more and more, he is going to do what the Republican, except for some key areas, he's going to do whatever the Republican Party and the leadership wants. And I think we'll get away with it until the results don't come in very good. Now, I'm not predicting a recession, but a number of people, Warren Buffett, as I've heard a number of people say this, that the economy very well will go into recession or could go into recession next year, although the economy is soft. Now, Warren Buffett, like me, doesn't predict recession, and he's not predicting a recession. He's just saying it's much softer than people think it is, and the statistic that pops out, and you need to be very, very careful of it, is we got the advance estimate for the third quarter and it of growth, real gross domestic product quarterly growth of 2.9%, which is okay. It surprised some people, but you got to remember that's the advance estimate and most likely will be revised downward. Now, it could go either way, but I think the direction is definitely downward. And Buffett pointed out, and a lot of people follow this, is goods have to be transported. So you look at both trucking and railroads, what's the activity in railroads and trucking? It's down, widely down, because there are different indexes by types of goods transported by railroads and trucks. That is a rather leading indicator, advance indicator in this case, that the economy is softening. Now, with the election of Donald Trump, people have to rethink, well, what's going to happen here? Is this generally positive for the U.S. economy? I think it's definitely is positive. But my concern focuses in on an area which neither Donald Trump nor, for that matter, Hillary Clinton would get into, and that's the budget. And the fact that we keep running these massive deficits deficits. Last year, it was close to $600 billion. I think it was $587 billion. And as more and more baby boomers retire and start to collect their Social Security as well as Medicare benefits, that is going to be one of the major drivers of those deficits. We've been, in essence, borrowing big time to pay for so-called social insurance programs. Entitlement programs is another way to say it, of Social Security and Medicare. And it's only going to get worse as more and more baby boomers reach retirement age. Remember, the baby boom generation was born in 1946 through 1964. And right now, there's a little less than 75 million baby boomers still alive. Many of them died, didn't get to 65, and won't be collecting Social Security or Medicare, but many, many have reached that age already, including Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton. Not that Donald Trump nor Hillary Clinton has to worry in that regard, but many, many Americans, that is a very important paycheck, and they believe, and I'm one of them, I believe it too, that they contributed into that plan over their working lives. And whether you like the Social Security program or not, my feeling, unfortunately, it's not going to matter now to me or even most people in the baby boom generation. If I could have invested that money, I would be a lot better off. Now, some people would not have invested it, and some people would make bad decisions. But I think overall, that's the problem, because Social Security is a pay-as-you-go program, as is Medicare. The people that are working today are paying for the benefits of the people that earn them and now qualify and are collecting Social Security. And when they have medical problems, part, not all, but part of their medical bills will be paid from Medicare. And those are running deficits, and they're getting bigger and bigger. And where it really will explode is when we get to around 2030, 2035, when all the baby boom generation is retired and collecting benefits. And then we'll have huge, huge, huge deficits. Now, the problem, and I keep repeating this, this is why I don't think the Trump plan adds up, because he hasn't addressed how is he going to go about cutting, and I mean real cuts, not this phony baloney baseline budgeting where they argue about the rate of growth of the budget next year, and when they cut it a little bit, they say, well, we've cut spending, and they fill in the blank $1 trillion, $2 trillion over 10 years, and it never happens, because if you look at the numbers, every year it's higher and higher and higher. That's the game, the Washington game, that I would eliminate baseline budgeting. It's a bad idea. Who should be killed? And really, that forces, or tries to force, people in the House and the Senate. Remember, all money bills, expenditure bills as well as tax bills, have to originate in the House. Then they go to the Senate, and the Senate passes their version, and they usually go to reconciliation, and they have to pass a bill that has the same language. So both houses are involved, but it's really the House that originates all this. And I'm just not optimistic. I think what caught my attention, although I think it's been beaten down, they wanted to have, it led to pork barrel spending, and the name just escaped me, and it'll come to me. Earmarks, that's what I was trying to grasp for. They want to go back to where congressmen can have earmarks. Now, as far as I'm concerned, that is going the wrong way. The American people won't stand for that, and that's a bad idea when it first was proposed, and it's a bad idea now, and it gives the wrong message to the American people. They're back to their old game, and they did it early. The nerve of them. They didn't even wait. They floated the idea. Now, supposedly it's been killed. I'll believe it a year from now, when it wouldn't surprise me we have earmarks come back. It's popular with both Democrats and Republicans. That's why it might come back. That's what passes for leadership out of Washington. I'm very critical of that. I think leadership should have said, no way, goodbye, go away. And Paul Ryan, I heard a news clip, was trying to give the rationale for why they considered it. Give me a break. He should know better and does know better. But if it does come back, it's business as usual. That is the message I'll take away. Business as usual. And that's what I'm afraid of. This is a very early indicator of that. It should have been hit over the head and hit over the head hard. No way are we going back to that nonsense. Problem is, you have people, dozens of people, that love earmarks because they could put their pet pork barrel projects in. But that's just, we'll see how that plays out. And my information, though, it's not going anywhere. Well, for now, it's not going anywhere. They'll try again and again and again. And then one day you'll wake up, turn on the news, and you'll hear, oh, earmarks are back. But we're going to do it responsibly. We want, and the rationale was, we want to tell the bureaucracy how to spend the money. Oh, yeah. Really? Come on. Can't you do a little bit better than that? The answer is no. Now, what I'm leading up to, and I know regular listeners probably know this, I sound like a broken record, and I admit that. But the core problem that has to be dealt with is those fact that government spending is out of control. And until you address that problem, and that means concrete proposals, you can't hide it because it's the budget, folks. It's the budget. And how is Donald Trump going to cut the budget? Or is he going to cut the budget? See, that's my problem. I don't think he's up to it. He's not up to it. Why? I think, well, let's just issue some more debt. And I think that's his attitude. I'm talking Mr. Trump. Cheney, yes, that Cheney, Vice President Cheney, and it's often quoted, deficits don't matter. Oh, yes, they do. But that's not where the focus should be. It's on cutting spending. Because what the Democrats always argue is, well, we should have, you know, I agree with you, we should have balanced budgets, so we need to increase the taxes. No, that is not what you need to do. What you need to do is increase the percentage, decrease the percentage of government spending in terms of the percentage of the economy. Because what government is doing on the federal level is squeezing out spending in the private sector, mainly by businesses. There's just so many economic resources to go around. And where the wealth, the jobs, and the income are created is in the private sector, and it's created by businesses. What you want to do is attract as many foreign investors to the United States, but also bring back the money that's over there that U.S. corporations have earned on businesses, their direct investment abroad. And Donald Trump has spoke to that. But it's not a strong incentive, not strong enough. And I'm getting back to right now they're considering. Congress is doing the work right now, and they've been doing this for many months, and I've heard periodic reports of what they're looking at, what it might be. And I think they already have a bill ready, but they're doing some, you know, crossing the T's, dotting the I's, and going to spring on us sometime in January, February, March, the first quarter of next year, and probably get Donald Trump's backing. There might be a little tweaking. A so-called fundamental reform of taxes. And it's needed. I'd be the first one to say it's needed. And Donald Trump is going to have a lot of say because he had a proposal. Actually, he had two. But it's the same old tax system. And the problem with that is it costs U.S. primarily businesses, and Donald Trump understands this because he has to pay some big money every year to do his tax return. It costs, in compliance costs, it's estimated that employers, businesses, pay over $500 billion, and that's what it'd be, where $1 billion is $1,000 million, just to prepare their tax returns. What do they owe in taxes? That's a drag. That's an unnecessary cost. We need to go to a broad-based consumption tax. Along the lines of the fair tax, or my version of it, fair tax less. Now, I'm not going to give another show on that. But you have two problems here. You have a tax cut that's definitely better than what we have now. I understand it's the pro-growth aspects of it. But what's not really being addressed and spelled out, and this has always been my problem with Trump. In many areas, he had position papers and more or less gave a general outline of what he wanted to do. The one area that was lacking, although his advisors might disagree, and I know what they would say, well, we're going to grow a way out of the problem. Well, no, you're not. Not if you truly don't cut, and I mean real cuts, government spending. And that means closing departments. The only one, well, the EPA and Education Department are the two that he's mentioned. And hopefully he does that. Appoint someone Secretary of Education with the understanding that within 2 years or 4 years, sooner rather than later, I would like it 1 year, this department will be closed. But if you look at the numbers, and people have looked at the numbers, well, that gives you savings. There's no argument there. And it definitely saves more money because that means The people that have to comply with these regulations no longer will. So there are savings there. The problem is just one department or one agency doesn't cut it. Now, I and the late, great Milton Friedman, the economist, he would close many of the departments, as would I. In this case, today, at least 8 departments, and you can make a good case for 10. One and one department and one agency does not really dramatically address the problem. It's a good first step. I mean, truly a first step. And I would dramatically go after first discretionary spending. Make it clear to the American people we no longer can afford many of these federal departments. Instead, what is the transition team doing? And what is the press speculating? Who is going to be the secretary of this, that, and the other thing? And who will be the deputy secretary? And who will be the assistant secretary? There are over 4,000 positions that have to be staffed in these various departments. The most important one, there's probably 40, some would say 50, but 40 to 50 key positions that really Donald Trump should have the final decision. He'll have the final decision on those top 40 or 50 for sure. But are you hearing anything from the Trump campaign or the people that he's looking at, how they're going to close the department? Agriculture, commerce, labor, education, housing and urban development, energy? The answer is no. Most of the discussion is why a certain politician would be ideal to run the department. And many senators and some congressmen, that would be a promotion. Career politician now is Mr. Secretary. And even when he leaves it, it's always Mr. Secretary. Mr. Big Bureaucrat, bloated, is what I would describe him. That's the status quo. That's business as usual. And I'm not hearing anything that's indicates to me clearly that he truly is going to change it. And you notice during the campaign, both when Trump was running for the nomination and debating other candidates and then debating Hillary Clinton, what did Big Lie Media, the television networks in particular, stay away from? This topic. Because Hillary Clinton wanted to make it bigger. So they weren't going to highlight that. In other words, more and more and bigger deficits and bigger national debt and fewer resources going to the private sector where the jobs are created, not expanding the budgets and the bureaucracies of the federal government. Now, I'm willing to wait and see. I'm not making any final determination here, but I'm getting a little bit concerned. Who is going to be and it's not one person. This I need to emphasize. And I really was somewhat remiss in the last program or the program before. A key position is whoever the budget director he's going to appoint. And I haven't seen any names. They're competent people out there. But the key to the budget is Donald Trump has to weigh in on this. Now, and I don't agree with the approach. Well, just cut 1% of all the department's budget. That will solve it. No, it won't. It's better than what's going on. And I would say, one, you're not dealing with the problem. We have departments that should be shut down. We can't afford them any longer. 1%, they'll be complaining about 1%. Now, 10% would get their attention and the American people's attention that Donald Trump means business. He truly is going to cut the budget. But why am I not optimistic? He's already said, in effect, we're going to increase defense spending. And I'm actually for that. I'm for a strong defense. I'm not for a strong defense to extend the American empire. We need to do some fundamental rebuilding of our weapon systems and force structures. But there's a difference between defense of the American Republic and projecting power around the world to defend our so-called national interests in country after country and acting like policemen of the world. Now, Donald Trump, you would get the impression listening to him that he doesn't want the American empire. He's not an interventionist. At least that's the impression I got and a lot of people got. And because of that, many people voted for him. And let me remind you, I'm not a Democrat, not a Republican. I didn't vote for either one of them. Because both parties, especially when they control the House, the Senate, and the presidency, have proven time and time again that they're big spenders. I'm surfacing this rather early. But is it even a consideration when they're considering candidates? See, if you were truly going to close departments, when you interview candidates, that should be a question. Do you think, fill in the blank, that this department should be closed? That's sort of a yes or no question. It's not open-ended. Mr. Sessions, Mr. Cruz, whoever you like for whatever position, if we appoint you Secretary of, will you close this department within 4 years? I think many of them will say, well wait a minute. I thought I was going to be Secretary of Agriculture, Commerce, Labor, and you want me to close the department down? Are you serious? I mean, shut it down permanently? Not just cut the budget a little? Yeah, close it. I bet you that conversation is not happening. And the reason is simple. Many people said they couldn't figure out Donald Trump. Well, I think you can. He's been a liberal Democrat for most of his life. And now he's a outsider Republican. But when push comes to shove, he's another liberal Republican. He's going to work out fine in terms of the House and the Senate. Don't worry, boys. Yeah, we have a new sheriff, but he believes in spending, defense spending, the fence hawks, yay team. And then the infrastructure, building roads, bridges, yay team. And he's already indicated entitlements are off the table. So what are we going to see? Token cuts in the departments of 1 to 5% versus dramatic cuts. You need 10% cuts, and you need to start thinking about closing it. And I mean, the sooner the better. Go through the list. Agriculture, commerce, energy, education, housing and urban development, interior, transportation. I always miss one. I've missed one. People are being interviewed for all of those positions as I speak. Cabinet positions, deputy secretaries. Number one and two people of all those departments. Now, I understand they need to do that. But where is fiscal responsibility here? And I bring that up. I'm a classical liberal today. When I got interested in politics, Barry Goldwater was running for president a long time ago. Barry Goldwater lost to Lyndon Baines Johnson in a landslide. And ever since, the Republicans, the Republican establishment, then it was the Rockefeller Republicans, today it's the Rhinos, Republicans in name only. The big spenders are still there. The party is largely the leadership. Why some of them would say, well, I'm a conservative. Well, let's examine it. Anyone can say they're a conservative. Even the neocons, the neoconservatives, would say they're a conservative. And just so for new listeners, I'm not a neocon. Far from it. Just the opposite. They're part of the problem. They're not the solution. They want to go have the United States, I'm somewhat exaggerating, but not much, not only be policemen of the world, but go to war in country after country. They're the warmongers as far as I'm concerned. Now, they will call me an isolationist. I'm not an isolationist. Far from it. What's not going on, and there's some exceptions here, and one just, Jeff Sessions has a reputation of being a budget hawk. What I'm talking about, I would have that reputation too, but I'm probably a budget eagle. I'm more in the vein of Calvin Coolidge, which I would hope Trump would emulate, but he's not going to do it. He's not going to do it. And if he doesn't, then the numbers don't add up. And it could very well be a repeat of the 1970s under both Nixon and Carter. God forbid. Oh, the economy will come back. We'll avoid the recession, but we'll have inflation. And the term, instead of today, we have what I would call stagnation today. We'll have stagflation. We'll have the worst of both worlds. We'll have an economy that's not growing above its historical trend rate of roughly 3.5%. Now, Trump has indicated his goal is to hit 4, 5, maybe even higher percent, and that's real gross domestic product growth on an annual basis. I'm all for that, but your policies have to articulate with that. And they're not, because what's not being clearly and honestly and above board being discussed is government spending, department by department, program by program. And where are the big bucks? There's no secret here. Entitlement programs, that's Social Security, Medicare. Welfare programs, there are a whole bunch of those. I'm not going to list them. Defense spending are the big three. You add interest on the debt, and if interest rates go back up, guess what happens? Yes, interest rate costs will go up as well. Because the Fed has clearly indicated, and this is the other story in the news, the Fed is going to increase in December. It's going to instruct the open market operations, people that trade the U.S. securities, Treasury securities, that the federal funds target should go up by at least a quarter. I would hope they would up it to 0.5%. Now, you can get an argument either way. If the economy is truly soft, and this is the reason why the Fed has not done this. Now, I'm not advocating this. I'm just telling you what the other side would say. Note, the Federal Reserve waited to after the elections to announce that it's going to increase interest rates. See, some are arguing, well, yeah, we need to do that. We need to have market-determined federal funds rates. And in my mind, that's at least 2 to 3% higher than where the federal funds rate is today. And they'll gradually increase it back up to that. And that will be the trend. And it's way overdue. This should have been happening 3 to 4 years ago. Gradually do it. And if it had been, I think the economy would be doing a lot better. Coulda, shoulda, woulda, though, doesn't really cut it. And we've had monetary doves, in particular Janet Yellen and her supporters on the Federal Reserve Board. There have been a few that wanted to increase it, but the majority didn't. You can always argue either side. They say they're data-driven. I don't want to be data-driven. I want to be market-driven. And all the result of going on 8 years of what some have called, and I would describe as well, as unconventional monetary policy, namely arbitrarily keeping the federal funds target rate low. Remember, they just started a while back to increase it. And then they were getting mixed signals as to whether the economy was softening or going into a recession. Now, in her testimony, it's clear to me they're going to increase it. I think it's already factored in both the stock market and the bond market. It's about time. The only surprise they could give is instead of increase it 0.25% or 25 basis points, increase it by 0.5% or 50 basis points. Remember, I'm saying it should be somewhere between 2 to 3%. It's not just me, a lot of people. And a term that I like but doesn't really, well, it's financial repression. What the Fed has been doing is financial repression. Who are they repressing? The American saver. They've kept interest rates deliberately low going on 8 years since December of 2008. Who has that hurt? People on fixed incomes, people that are risk averse. In other words, they put their money in savings accounts or money market funds or CDs. By keeping interest rates low for so long, they have hurt American savers and have forced some of them that are willing to take the risk to invest in much riskier asset class, namely equities, primarily U.S. equities, which, if you know what you're doing and invest wisely, is a way to get a higher return, no doubt about that. But there is a class of investors that they can't have big mistakes, and they can't wait because many of them live off that interest to supplement their Social Security. Its savers generally have that been hurt. To the benefit of who? The big banks, who have made out very, very, very well. That's why I laugh about the Democratic Party. Oh, woe is me. We have to take care of the middle class. Who are the biggest supporters of Hillary Clinton? The commercial investment banks. They're the ones that get these big bonuses. They were the ones that were bailed out. See, I was part of the Tea Party movement, and I was against bailouts, period, full stop. I believe in capitalism. You risk your own money, and if you're right, you get the reward, and if you're wrong, you pay the price. What about Mr. Trump? He has experience with banks. Remember, at least three. I am not conversant as I should be, although at one time I was. He's had at least three, not personal bankruptcy, but businesses go bankrupt. And yes, he's met with banks and renegotiated the terms. But what were the banks going to do? And he's come back from it. And that's all to his credit. I'm not criticizing that. But the temptation of Mr. Trump will be, deficits don't matter, we'll just finance it. That's avoiding downsizing the federal government. It's avoiding balancing the budget. That's business as usual. That's the status quo. And that's the problem, a big problem. Now, there are people, his advisors, I know, some of his closest advisors that understand this, that have worked in Wall Street. Now, some are close advisors, some are a little distant. They all understand this, and Donald Trump understands this. So either he deals with it directly if he wants to, or he hires people, not only the budget director, but secretaries of these departments. And if he truly is fiscally responsible and wants to do the difficult task that should have been done, ladies and gentlemen, decades ago and wasn't. You know the phrase, kick the can down the road? Well, they've been doing that now for 30, 40 years. And the can gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and someday you won't be able to kick it anywhere. And in 14, 15, maybe 20 years at the most, this all ends badly and very much in a day of reckoning. So I'm willing to wait. I have no choice. And I hope that the transition team interviews people and gets their ideas on how, whatever the department is, what would they do in terms of the spending, the budget of that department? Would they increase it? Would they leave it the same? Or would they decrease it? And what would they cut? Those are some of the questions I'd be asking the candidates. I bet you very few want to cut the spending. Many probably haven't even given it a serious thought. We should and need to be closing departments. We should and need to have fundamental tax reform, such as a broad-based consumption tax. We should and need, sooner rather than later, balanced budgets. Are the people that Donald Trump is interviewing and talking to, and the transition team is interviewing and talking to, are those questions being asked? And what about the answers? See, many people, when they get into power and run an agency or department, they want a bigger agency and department, a bigger budget, hire more people. And that's a measure, in their minds, of success. Very few come in and say, what, if anything, this agency is doing is truly beneficial to the American people? And if there are benefits, what's the cost? Have you heard anything out of the Trump team of having a group, call it downsizing government? I haven't. Not at all. If anything, we're going to increase defense spending. We're definitely going to increase infrastructure investments. And entitlement programs are not going to be changed. I don't know where he stands on welfare programs. But the big money is in the mandatory programs. It's not in discretionary spending, with the exception of the Department of Defense. And he said that's off the table. It's a process of elimination. If you're truly going to be fiscally responsible, and I don't think he is, because why? He's a Republican. He's just like a Democrat. Republicans are Democrats light. They differ in what they want to spend the money on, but both want to spend money and both want to increase the budgets of these departments. If Donald Trump cannot bend that curve down in terms of government spending, and I mean bend it down, where instead of federal government spending going up, up, and up year after year, decade after decade, if he can't bend that curve down and have it going in the other direction, he's never, and I mean never, going to get the growth rates that he's shooting for. Never. He'll be lucky to get back to the market trend rate of about 3.5% growth of real GDP. That's why I'm emphasizing it. He needs to wake up to this. You know, some people have asked the question, well, does he understand microeconomics? Well, I do, but that's begging the question. There are a lot of people that understand microeconomics better than I do, but they're big spenders. They're called Democrats. And unfortunately, many of them are Republicans. And like I said, I told you what was in the news. They want to bring back earmarks. Bad idea. Does that give you confidence? Not me. And let me say this. I'm not underestimating at all the difficulty. This is hard work. And the only way it's going to happen is if we have a leader in the White House. Not someone that's going to go along with the Republican Party leadership. Because if he's going to do that, with the exception of the few issues that he's made his own, namely immigration and trade. And I'm not even addressing trade. That's another show. But if he's going to go along to get along, you shouldn't have voted for him or Hillary. You should have stayed home like I did. And remember what I said. The day he's sworn in, who is going to be against him? The leadership of the Democratic Party, the leadership of the Republican Party, the bureaucrats, the donor class, the owner-donor class, and big lie media. They're going to fight him every inch of the way. Will he fight back? And not just on his very important, but it's not the top problem. I support him on immigration until and if he goes along with the Republican Party leadership and gives citizenship, and the phrase is touchback immigration, if that's truly what Donald Trump is all about, then you have been sold a bill of goods, your Trump supporters. What that means is, oh, yeah, he'll deport them. I'm waiting to see that. I want that, but I'm waiting to see. But if he's going to give them a visa a couple of months or even a year later and then expedite their return and then put them on a pathway to citizenship, thanks but no thanks. See, what gets me upset, I think Donald Trump's heart is in the right place. We have at least 20 to 30 million American citizens right today that if they could find a full-time, good-paying job with benefits, would take it. They're in that 94, 95 million people that are not in the labor force. Now, some would lead you to believe that all of them are looking for a job. That's simply very, very misleading because many of the people not in the labor force don't want to be in the labor force. They've retired, and I mean permanently retired, or they're stay-at-home parents, or they're pursuing a college education. Simply, they don't want to work. But I would say upwards of a third of that 94 million, in other words, over 30 million. No one knows the exact number. All of these are estimates. Don't be fooled that I know the exact number. The government doesn't even know the exact number. That's why they do samples or polls every month on the jobs report. But that's a big number. That's definitely more than were unemployed during the Great Depression, when the estimated unemployment rate in March of 1933 reached nearly 25%. It was 24.9%. I think the number unemployed were 12 to 13 million. Today, we truly have more than twice that are unemployed, not in the labor force, not counted, given the way the government tries to minimize the problem. They're always going to put a good face on it, and you can complain about it all you want. And they at one time had seven different unemployment rates, and they used to calculate it differently, just like they used to calculate the cost of living increase that you got on Social Security. Notice you're being screwed on that. Those economists really know how to do that. Their salaries went up. I'm not going to get on to that, because I would lose you. I'm not predicting a recession, and I'm glad that consumer confidence is up. But a day or a week or even a month of positive economic news, while good, you have to look at reality. And that's not easy to do. It means looking at a lot of information, whether you're a professional investor, an economist, whether you're the Federal Reserve Board. I'm not saying it's easy. But I think everyone in Washington knows what the problem is. Now, they will give it a label, fiscal policy. That's another way to saying we're spending too much money and we're taxing the American people too much. Bottom line, you need to cut drastically taxes. Trump goes a little bit way down that road. But the harder thing to do, by far the harder thing to do, is cut government spending. And no, literally few, if any, questions during the debates on this. There were a few. Especially during when Trump was running for the nomination. But very few, because they wanted to stay away from this. You see, neither Hillary Clinton's nor Donald Trump's numbers truly add up. They wanted to stay away from what? The bad news. If they're really up to the job, what am I talking about? Layoffs of federal employees. Estimates are there are 1.9 million federal employees. If you close down permanently 8 to 10 departments, as well as agencies, slash the budgets and the projects that those agencies were involved in. Do you think there would still be 1.9 million federal employees? No. It should be cut in half. General managers of divisions or large corporations, if you ever talk to them, they'll tell you one of the things that they manage by is headcount. How many employees do they have? Do they need more or less? But they pay attention to that because that drives, and you better believe it drives, the cost of the good of service that they're responsible of delivering to the public. So that's one of the metrics that any competent, good general manager does. Gets the headcount down, especially if you're in the situation we are right now. That means layoffs. It means budget cuts. And in the private sector, that's what you had. In the government sector, the federal government sector, it should mean shutting down departments. And you never hear, except for a few people, and I'm one of them, in talk radio mentioning this. It's business as usual, the status quo. And that's what the American people were voting against. They know this direction, this inability of the federal government to balance the budget and cut spending, and I mean drastically cut spending, is what the American people want, and Donald Trump better deliver, or he will be a one-term president. Right now, I don't care how long it takes for him to put his team together. And why I have a few preferences, as does everybody. Ultimately, it's Donald Trump that's going to decide who he's comfortable with and hopefully puts the right person in the right position. He's going to make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. You want to minimize the mistakes. My fear is he'll get some competent people. There are a lot. I heard on the radio 50,000 resumes for 4,000 jobs. You got less than 1 in 10 chance of getting a job in the federal government. No way, Jose, would I go there. Because if you're truly responsible, if you truly want to make America great again, you're going to have to downsize the federal government. That's what I'm talking about. And virtually everybody in the political elite, not everyone, but nearly everyone in the so-called, what I call the political establishment elite, they don't want this. They want it to increase, some dramatically. And they all have their hobby horse. Some want newer and more submarines, newer and better aircraft carriers, new fighter planes, new tanks, new this, new that, new nuclear weapons. That's one I could sign on for. We need to modernize our nuclear weapons. Ladies and gentlemen, there's just so much money, and it's past time for the federal government to truly live within the means of the American people and not finance government by more and more debt. And that has been the pattern. And what's different now is the sheer size of it. They always want to play the game relating it to the size of the economy. That's another attempt to minimize what's happening. It only works if you can find investors willing to buy Treasury securities. Now, that hasn't been much of a problem up to now, but it is a problem. That's why the Federal Reserve was buyer of, not last resort, or first resort, of Treasury securities. That's what quantitative easing was all about. Minimizing the cost of the debt that the federal government, and we're talking first 2-3 years of the Obama administration, the deficits were over $1 trillion, $1.4 trillion, $1.3 trillion, nearly $1.3 trillion. And who was buying big chunks of that debt? It was the Federal Reserve. Quantitative easing 1, 2, 3. It's not printing money, it's creating money at a keyboard. And that's what is happening not only in the United States, but across the globe. It never ends well. Empires decline and fall. They overreach. And you see it in what's happening in the financial affairs of the United States government. So Mr. Trump needs to get smart. I think he has people and understands generally what's happening. But is he up to the task of finding the people that will deal with the number one problem, namely government spending is out of control? Are you up to it, Mr. Trump? Who are you going to appoint to do this? And it's not one person. It's actually dozens. It's hundreds of people. But that's not the mindset of Washington, D.C. It's certainly not the mindset of the Democratic Party, nor the mindset of the Republican Party. We already saw that. Bring back earmarks, the nerve of them. I'm not optimistic, and that's why I sat home. It's going to take a third party that truly understands the problem and, more importantly, knows what to do about it and will communicate this to the American people. In other words, tell the American people the truth. That's one of the problems. Both parties, as well as representatives and senators, are afraid of the American people. They're going to be mad at us when they learn the extent of the problem. Well, I have news for you. Many already know. What do you think that indicator of going in the wrong direction is? The American people know we can't continue going in that wrong direction. We need to make a turn, really stop on the brakes and go in reverse. How many real budget cutters are going to be those secretaries in the departments? Oh, there's at least one or two or three that maybe Mr. Trump will give the marching orders. I want you to close permanently that department, and you got 4 years to do it, Or do you want to do that? And there'll be some people, But can they do it? Can they communicate that? The urgency of it. It's imperative that we do it. Not if they're from Washington and not if they're career politicians. What happens, and I'm afraid it's happening, Mr. Trump, they go to Washington, and to get along, they go along. They go along with the leadership. Now, I hope I am wrong, because it's going to take a leader that can bang heads, and he's going to need people at the secretary level, the deputy secretary level, and below. First are the departments that will continue, cut their budgets, and the departments that will be eliminated, downsized. We need a streamlined government for this century. Not a bloated bureaucracy, the so-called regulation state. The quickest way to do away with regulations is to do away with the departments and then tell Congress, controlled by your party, to rescind those laws. We have today the regulated state or the regulatory state, and that's part of what you get when you keep spending more and more money. That is doing tremendous damage to the growth rates together with taxes. And a key part of Mr. Trump's campaign, I'm going to be the one to cut regulations and cut taxes. If that's what you're going to do, then start closing departments and agencies and make it clear that's what you're doing and that's why you're appointing, fill in the name, Mr. America. We're going to let the American people keep more of their money and they're in a better position to know where to spend it, and that includes businesses. We need to put the federal government on a diet. They have a serious eating disorder. I call it SAD, spending addiction disorder. I've just looked at the time, and I'm late for an appointment. That's what happens when you get wound up. So I'll keep you posted as to any news out of the transition team and some key appointments in the economic area. And I'm not talking economists. I'm talking people that are executives that are going to really downsize the federal government. I'm not sure that there are that many out there, quite frankly. The mindset is bigger is better. Well, bigger is worse in this case. Thank you for listening. I hope you have been informed, whether you agree with me or not. And the way you listen to the Pronk Pop Show is to go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And under my photograph, I have links. This is show 798. But below that, I have additional information. Call it homework. Make up your own mind, because we could be on a verge of a repeat of the 1970s. I hope not. Again, thank you. And now, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by pronkpops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.